The following is a part of the Radio Memphis On Demand service. It originally aired live on Radio Memphis and has been edited for time.
It's time for your weekly road crew tip, brought to you by the Radio Memphis Road Crew Radio Series and Ken Barr Films.
That's right. It is time for your weekly tip right here on Radio Memphis. And of course, you guys heard it right. Brought to you by Ken Barr Films and Radio Memphis. And this is the weekly tip that we do that's actually going to be bringing you some insight, okay? For whether you guys are out on the road, whether you're in the studio, whether you're on the stage, whatever the case may be, and you are trying to help that band figure it all out. And of course, you guys also know that I get really, 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 really excited when I get to sit there and I get to have a nice little chat with the UK connection. Because every time I get to talk with him, man, it is nothing but a ton of fun. And so without any further ado, because we're already, look, if you guys are just, you know, figuring this out, man, check it out. We're already on tip number 30. And, you know, Batty Walsh has this fantastic way of being able to step in right at the right time on a cool number. What's up, Batty? Hello?
Hello. Ah, there we go.
Ah. Hello. The future.
New Zealand, it's hello from the bit you had already, and we'll make it better.
What's up?
Hello, world. Happy Easter. Happy holidays.
Happy belated Easter to you, my friend.
Yeah. Everything going over there.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. My goodness, you know, everybody hopping along, as you know.
Easter bunnies.
Easter bunnies. What'd you do? What'd you do for Easter?
I didn't have an egg. I had a shepherd's name double stout. I do believe I may have sent you a photograph of it. Yes, it's hard to get double stout.
Yes, I saw that double stout, and it looked extremely stout.
It's one that put Greg Smith right if he had it. I'll tell you now, it's like a meal in a bottle.
That, I mean, you almost, looks like you almost have to kind of like chew that.
Yeah, well, yeah, almost, yeah, yeah. I've been trying to find it for ages. One place I used to do it from used to do it and then stopped and I haven't found it for ages. And I went into a small shop the other day and I looked at the shelf and went, wow, how long have you had this? Oh, we're just trying it out. I said, well, I'll try it out. I'll tell you what, I'll have all you got.
Oh, and that tripped them out because you actually offered to get everything they had then, correct?
Yeah. Oh. We'll keep it in there.
See, okay, this is where I need your help. Because apparently I don't have any class. Okay, you know, I try, man. I try. I mean, and I'll go dark, man. I'll go dark amber and I'll go, you know, I'll go all of that, man. But when it gets real thick like that, man, how do you do it?
It's easy. Just pinch your nose and take a mouthful of it, and before long you'll be loving it.
Really?
There's different types. I mean, Guinness is your best one, really. But they're all different tastes and everything. You need a bag of scratchings with them as well. Something. Oh, that's wicked. Bag of scratchings and double stout. Beautiful.
So if, like,
if you're pregnant, you're not pregnant, are you?
Of course not. Remember, we've had this discussion. we've had this discussion. No, far from that.
Well, you don't have to be pregnant. You can have one anyway.
Oh, see, all right. I just and so, like, okay. So if I show up in your neck of the woods, all right, and we go to a pub together, okay, and they're as soon as I open my mouth, they're already going to figure out that I'm not from there. So
I have an idea. It'll kind of give it away a bit. And they'll look at you and think, you don't know much about beer.
You're going to say just order Guinness and that's the safest thing for me to do?
Yeah. If you say, oh, I'll have a pint of Guinness, please, they'll think, ah, okay. Either she's a really daft American or she does know her beer. She's ordering Guinness.
Okay. So what happens if I don't order a Guinness and I order something else?
They'll just, you know, they'll think, well, all their beer is good in the air and out, so they wouldn't think anything really, other than, wow, she knows a beer.
I ask for something that they don't have.
Oh, they've got everything. They've even got Woodford's Reserve. America. I bet you haven't got that in America.
No.
Woodford's Reserve.
Okay. All right.
They have everything.
See.
If you ask for a glass of orange juice or lemonade, they'll be thinking.
No. Okay. I won't do that. I won't do that. And now, look, I'm not a big wine drinker either. You know what I mean?
Are you? Are you not?
No, I'd rather have a beer.
I'll tell you something funny about wine. I like red wine.
Okay.
And then, about 20 years ago this week, I had a bit of a car accident, and I hit a tree, and it left me knocked out for a week in the hospital.
Oh, wow.
And I never used to, I could drink white wine, but if you gave me a bottle of red and a bottle of white and said, take your pick, I'd always go for the red.
Yes.
And when I came out of this coma, I had a fancying for white wine. And now I really like white wine as well.
Really?
Yeah. So how about that?
That's what happened. That's what happened to you. Yeah. It's the tree.
It could have been worse. I could have woken up without the liking for beer. That would have been terrible.
See, no, that would have been terrible. Now, see, I can't. Yeah, I'm not a wine. Yeah, if I have to do wine, man, I'll do a red. I'm the same way. I'll do a red and stuff. But now, if we're going out and we're having fun and stuff, and you know, there's always that stereotype assumption, you know, that all the girls are gonna have some wine and you'll got. No, I'm like, I want a beer.
the girls, not so much now. Girls drink pints of beer over here now.
Yeah,
halves. And they just drink pints. It's easier.
And you guys don't think anything different of it?
No, not at all. No. When I was growing up, it was like, blimey, girls drinking pints. Now it's just normal.
Well, if I go over there, I'm not going to go over there unless I know you're near. Because I cannot be left unattended, and I don't want to be taken advantage of, and I don't want anybody to, you know, tell me that this is the way something goes down, and it's not, and they're doing it. Or I just, I can't do that. I don't want. Yeah, you have to be there.
Yeah, like say here, drink this case of Budweiser because.
But you know what? If you drank that case of Budweiser, man, it got you the cool seat on the bus with the cool dudes. You know.
Yeah, but there were two. There were actually two seats on that bus. And Stevenson. Yeah. Go down. Dang, blang it. I hear you saw her. You ran into your nice dad.
I did. I met him in person, you know, when I got to go to Vegas a couple weeks back, you know, with family and stuff. And we had, you know, and it was funny because, you know, part of my family got there first, and then the rest of my family didn't show up till the next night. And so when they would show up, it would be crazy, you know, all over the place. And so, you know, Dan and I, you know, he was in the middle of, doing load in for J-Lo. And, you know, and of course, you know, he had a little time out and stuff. And so we met up and we got to sit down and we got to chat, you know, for a little bit and stuff. And it was just, it's so surreal when you get to meet somebody. And because we've spent so much time and we've become such great friends, you know, over the course of time. And when we finally got to meet, it was like, all right. So I already know who you are. You know, it was fantastic. I loved meeting him. So,
good? Was he okay? Yeah.
He was nice.
Yeah, nice Dan.
He was not. He was not the nice Dan that you guys are talking about. No, he was. He was nice to me. Stop it.
He's a sort of gentleman to the ladies.
He is. He is. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. He's not. He's not dumb.
He didn't care about us, man.
No, man, because he knows where you're from, man. He knows your. Yeah, he knows all your.
He did take care of us. He did actually care for us a lot.
He loved you guys. Are you kidding?
Yeah, he took care of us.
Did you? Oh, my God. And yes, you guys are tuned in to Radio Memphis. We are going to get to the road tip. Did you see the thing that was showing? It was airing. I know it was airing here in the States. You know, the Jesus Christ Superstar.
I've seen lots of it on Facebook thing with the gaffer as,
What'd you think?
Cool. It's coop, you know. Can't go wrong, can you?
It's It was total coop, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Coop, man.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
I was going to think, well, you know, because I sat there and I thought about it, because when I was sitting there thinking, because I got to see pieces of it, you know, and I was thinking about you and Dan and Kenny and, you know, Ken Barr and, you know, and everybody, and I was thinking, this is what they know, you know, in the beginning when they were together, and they're like, this, they probably saw this and go, oh, yeah, he's doing it.
Yeah. Put some gutter cats on there, he'd soon be running away. Gutter cats would be me, Ken, J-Man. Dan.
Yeah.
See, Ralphie. Whole bunch of us, then you'd see something there. Come on in, Herod, let's have you. We'll take care of you.
Speaking.
Yeah, the coop, man.
That's it. That's it. And those were... Those were the shows. And, you know, speaking of shows, you know, and things like that, tip number 30, you got a cool number again. You got 3-0, man. You got 3-0. We're on 30.
My age.
I believe you. I do.
I wish.
I do. Shh.
I've got number 30. This might sound weird to some people maybe starting out, but this is, it can be for anybody, but this would be a good little tip for a band that's going perhaps on a small tour, and then maybe it's the first tour.
You know? Okay.
And this is advancing your gig.
Okay.
It might sound a bit technical, but it's not. All that is phoning up your gig, your first gig, your next, whatever it is, a week or two in advance. On the larger tours, it could be a year in advance. Phone them up and ask them some simple questions. For example, is there somewhere to park when you get there?
Ah.
Will they have to cone a section of the road off for you? Like they do at the Air and Hounds here in Birmingham. They put cones out in the road when there's a band turning up to save them a space for the van. What time can you get in? What's the access like? Are there any stairs? Would there be anybody there to give you a hand when you get in?
Wow.
Someone that can help you? Are there any obstructions on the way into the stage, the loading? Yeah, talking to your stage, your size of your stage, the clearance from the floor to the roof.
Okay.
Any fire curtain that may need to come down and be kept clear.
Okay.
Any obstacles that you need to avoid.
Okay.
Fire lanes in clubs and pubs, areas that you need to keep clear, where you might think we can stack our empty cases there.
Right.
No, it's a fire lane. You need to keep that clear.
Right.
Dressing rooms, where are they? How many are there?
Right.
What's the access from the dressing room to the stage like?
Right. A lot of stuff
showers,
right there.
You might have showers, who knows, you might not. Storage space for your empty cases. It's endless. Sound and lights, what are they? Do you have an in-house tech who'll help you?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have an in-house tech who may do your sound and your lights?
Right.
And I guess a really, really important one is, where's the fire exit? Where's the route out? How do we get out?
How do we get out when something happens? These are, you know, Batty, these are good things. And see, here's the thing, though. You know, and especially when you're talking about like a young band who's just getting started, and so ultimately these are questions that they need to be asking themselves. You know,
yeah.
You know, once you get to a certain level, and once you're when you're talking about the levels that, you know, you and the guys, you know, that you guys tour at and stuff, and you know, obviously you got your managers, you got your tour managers, you got your stage managers, and you've got everybody that's responsible for asking, you know, specific questions based upon, you know, what they're doing. But as a young band, you know, these are very prime questions that they ask, and it's how many times, Matt, how many times do you see they just show up and go, okay, here we are?
Yeah, and they go, yeah, well, carry on then. Get your gear in, it's up there. Some people might, at the Air and Hounds, they might hear, and they'll go, do you need a hand or anything? You know? And then people will go, yeah, here you are, you're not on until tomorrow. With smaller places as well, and it might be your first tour, it really does pay off. There's other things like the power, the electricity. You can always meter that yourself as well when you get in there to make sure you haven't got any electrical current going where you shouldn't be.
Right.
Where could you leave your van when you've finished emptying it?
Right.
Leave it where it is. Oh, here's an interesting one, which probably it might not affect people so much. Can we use pyro?
No, that's a good one, because I mean,
we know what happened a few years ago there, and you know, can we use pyro?
Mm-hmm.
What's it like? Let's have a look, set some off outside or something, let's see what you've got, or just a straight no, usually, you know.
Normally it's a straight no, but you know, it's so funny. When you throw that question in there, Bat, about using things like that, you know, that would entail a group that is developing a stage show to go with their with their stuff, you know. So,
yeah.
You know, there's
I mean, you know, an up and coming band that might not they might not have such things, but them, you know, like you say, they might be moving on up a bit and maybe trying things out.
Sure.
Hold of some of this stuff, which is, you can get hold of it. It's just how you use it, where you can use it.
Sure.
Places might not have the license to allow that to happen. But certainly things like the power, what's, you know, the sound system. What sound system have you got there? Do you have an in-house technician who can mic up for us and set us up? Do you have an in-house technician who can do our sound?
Right.
What's your lighting system like?
Right.
Can we do the sound and the lights?
Right.
Have we got a guy, a couple of guys or girls that can do it? And when I was coming through that, occasionally people would go, you can't do the sound, we've got an in-house guy. It's like, well, you've never seen the band, it's Ruby Turner, you've never seen it. So how do you know what goes where, what effects, if any?
How do you know? And it's, I mean, some of those, and you just had to kind of roll with it. I mean, especially if you're a younger band, you know what I mean? It's like there's really like no choice, you know?
No, and it's actually, I think it's got better these days. The houses are not so, you can't touch this. You can stand there and point, and they'll let people have a go and do their best. Because usually, some, you know, bands, if you start now, bands, they've got someone with a bit of ability. If they haven't, the best thing to do is say, look, we haven't got a sound guy, we don't know how to
run a
sound desk. Is there someone that you can get to do, and we'll have a guy there? Maybe you might not have anybody, it might be just the band. We haven't got anybody to do the sound or any lights for us, could you guys do it?
Right.
And in-house we'll go, yeah, fine. We'll do that for you. No problem.
So you bring up every time I talk to you, and I always get this really stirring thing in my head about stuff, you know, we talk about sound guys in live venues and stuff. And for the longest time, it seems like there's never been, you know, there's been those weekend warriors, okay? And I'm going to say it, you know, that were there just to, you know, get the paycheck, run sound, whatever happens, you know, regardless if they care about the band or not, per se. And then there's like the last of the Mohicans, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
You know, that like truly like they love their venue, or they love the people they work with, or they love, you know, they love what they do. And, you know, and not only do they do these sounds and stuff like that, but they're also giving some advice, and they're also, you know, trying to help those bands that are coming through. They're working with the ones who are veterans, and they're glad to, and the ones who are new, they're, you know, trying to share some food for thought, you know, that kind of stuff. There's a thing for me, you know, and it's almost one of those things where does the responsibility fall, you know, to find that perfect sound person for that venue?
Venues, like there's some here in Birmingham, and there's the guys I know that work in these venues. They've come up the same kind of route. Instead of being that band that turn up in the van,
mm-hmm.
They've just wanted to do sound or get involved in the technical side of gigs and do lights and something, and fall into these clubs and go to the clubs and go, look, I want to try, you know, and become good in-house guys. They might have gone away on tours, they didn't like it, so they're in-house. And there's a couple of particular ones I can think of in Birmingham, and the one just happened to fall into a studio years ago and walked in and said, I want to do this. And they're like, yeah, okay, then put the kettle on, make some tea, and we'll show you what's what.
Right.
Now he's like a really, really good engineer that any band could turn up with and say, look, we haven't got an engineer. Can you do our sound? And they'll get them a great sound. You might not know the intricacies if they want effects here and there, but it'll get them a good sound.
Right.
You know, and he'll take care of things in the venue. If people want desks swapping out, he'll do that as well. That was a guy that's just, like, I wanted to go away on tours. He just wanted to twiddle the knobs on the desk and do sound, and he does. And there's a few people like that in Birmingham. They're really good in-house guys.
Hmm.
If they've got a small tour, maybe for a week or so, they might go on it, but generally they like their house, and they cover two or three venues here in Birmingham.
Right. Is there a thing, though, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong in thinking this, but like, let's say for instance, you know, I have a venue and I know that you're a fantastic sound engineer, right? And I invest in you in order to run this sound for my venue. And, you know, versus giving you like you know, cuts of the, you know, cuts of the door, or, you know what I mean? You know what I'm talking about. Everybody, and this was what always was real strange, man, how everybody always tried to riddle out how they paid, you know, their staff and what they do. And I know that there's a thought process, and I know that there's actually a fair understanding of why this works, but do you think it's feasible? Do you think it's feasible that somebody who would invest in, you know, invest in somebody that would ultimately, you know, bring the most incredible sound, you know, to their venue and develop it and do these things with these artists and stuff like that, you know, that should be like a salary job versus, or, you know, a per hour job versus a whatever comes to the door? Or what do you, I mean, how do you riddle this out?
Well, the guys that I know that we're talking about, they actually work for the venues. They get paid salaries.
See.
And
see,
they get a wage, you know.
Yep.
If a band turn up and they haven't got a sound guy and they want to slide them a few extra dollars or what, you know, that's fine.
Right. You
know? But they're working for the venue.
Right.
They're getting paid okay, you know. And like someone said to me the other day at one of the Birmingham Arena, I think it was Fall Out Boy or 30 Seconds to Mars, one of the American guys said, what people don't realise now is being a stagehand is a proper job now.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Said, yeah, that's right, yeah. And being, funny enough, I said being in-house guys, you know, it's a proper gig. And I suppose the only thing that maybe some venues would have trouble doing is keeping hold of somebody if a tour came up. But a couple of guys that I know, they wouldn't particularly want to go away.
Right.
And stay in Birmingham.
Right.
They like working. Generally, a lot of the bands that come through will have engineers, and the in-house guys will just say, this is the gear, do you know it? And they'll go, yeah, fine. And I have this. That's another thing for your event and your gig. Give the venue a list of your requirements with regard to microphones. How many channels do you need on your desk?
Right.
Send them a channel list through. Email it. Do whatever you do these days. Text it. And when you turn up, like Dan here in the one in Birmingham, he'll have everything ready for you anyway.
There it is.
Like some stands, everything.
There it is.
That's his gig, and he enjoys it.
He's enough. He's enough.
Your band will turn up without an engineer and they'll go, I'll do you, Sam.
You remember a time, though, it was like, there was always like those certain venues, whether it was here in the States or whether it's over there, right, where you knew that if you got a gig at that venue, that it was going to be on, you know what I mean? Because sound was in, everything was, you know, everything was run with a tight ship, everything was where it needed to be, and it was one of those things where playing and being able to do it, you know, and successfully put on a fantastic show at, like, said venue would almost make or break your career.
Yeah, it's still the same. I only got a break doing sound for Ruby Turner in about 1983, because I used to do everything else with my pal Pedro, who I'm still good friends with. Pedro used to do the sound and the drum kit, and I did everything else, the guitars, the basses, the keyboards, both sets of keyboards.
Wow.
And I used to do the lights, but I only fell into that by accident because nobody could do the lights. And then one day Pedro had to go to Europe on tour with another Birmingham band, and they said, who's going to do the sound? And the drummer then, Bob Lamb, said, that he can do it. And straight away I was like, well, he said, you know what you're doing. Showed you the desks, and you've stood with Pedro, and that's jumped in at that chance and did Ruby for about 3 or 4 years.
Hmm.
And started doing, you know, big theatres when she went on tour, and big Odeons and things when she went on tour with Womack and stuff.
Yeah.
And more than off these people. I remember we used to do a lot of BBC radio sessions.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And when you did them, you had to go down to Maida Vale, which is in London. It's a very, very posh area and some very nice studios. And when you went in the BBC studios, it was, you know, very very strict, you know, and you couldn't touch anything. And I go in to do the sound in one of these studios, and they say, of course not. Out of the way, you terrible young fellow. And the great blues man, Alexis Corner, walked in one day to a Ruby gig, and he said, hey, really cool, what a really cool guy. He went, hey, buddy, how you doing, man? I'm like, all right, Alex, how are you, mate? He said, hey, are you not doing the sound? I said, no, the gentleman in there won't let me near the desk. And he walked in, he said, hey, guys.
Do you know who you have with you?
Right. Do the sound, man. You know, he may look young, he knows what he's doing. I've been to loads of gigs. And they immediately bowed and scraped because it was Alexis Corner said, this guy knows what he's doing. Which I was forever grateful for, but it was just maybe see like another side of it going, wow, when someone walks in and go, no, you can't touch anything, and then all of a sudden the great Alexis Corner walks in and goes, guys, let him do his job.
And then you can touch everything.
Step aside. Is there anything we can help you with? I said, I wouldn't mind a cup of tea.
Ah, look at you.
Turn the table. You know, you get breaks. I mean, some bands for young and starting off on tours, some of these questions in this list may really help, you know.
They will very
you
much.
You have a dressing room, you'll have to get changed in your van or in the toilet or something. But you, another question is, what time can we load in at?
Yes, right.
You might turn up at like 3 in the afternoon and there's nobody there till 5.
Mm-hmm.
No one from the venue. Sat there for a few hours. All these little questions will make your gig a lot easier.
They will.
Plus, you'll show the venue that, you know, if you did phone them 2 weeks ahead, they'll show you that perhaps you do know what you're on about and what you're doing.
Absolutely, and that you're actually professional about it. One, and also
yeah,
too,
right. And you're together. You know, you're asking them these questions.
Yep.
You know, they may say, you know what, you will save your spot in the car park because it's right by the door where you load in, and if we don't save your spot there, you'll have to go around the front and carry all your gear through the venue, and you don't want to do that.
You don't want to do that.
For the sake of a phone call, you know?
Well, it's also, too, I mean, you know, let's be like the last Boy Scout here. I mean, if you're asking all of these questions and stuff like that, you know, it's like the, you know, it's the preparedness manual, you know what I mean, of doing things. One, but also, too, you get the layout of the land, you know, before you get there.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
you may know some of the, you might. Well, once you've, the thing is, when you do a few venues, if you're starting off, you can keep your own notes on what the answer to these questions were, what the get in was like, what the car parking situation was like, what the stage was like, was there any access issues, is there something that you need to keep clear, fire lanes, and you can keep those. Next time you go back there,
yep,
things will change. But again, when you phone them up next time you're there next year, you can say, is everything still the same as last year? Can I just run through this with you?
Yep. Great
now
ad.
We've had another extension on and half the car park's gone now, so you've got to come and park up, you know, whatever, you know.
Great ad. Absolutely.
We've got a bigger stage. We've got a smaller stage. Anything could happen, you know.
Absolutely.
And you'd actually build up a good little file of these gigs that you're going to.
Right.
And, you know, they might go, yeah, we've got new dressing rooms now. You can have one for each member of the band. Which probably never happens.
But no, it's never going to happen. You're lucky. You're lucky if you get one.
That's right. Yeah.
where do you gig, man? This is awesome.
We've got a place upstairs you can use. You know.
Right.
Everybody uses it. We've got a room you can go to. It's okay. Or no, it's we haven't got anything. Like that, you know, you want
right
to have a shower. That's probably rare in some venues. Other venues, it's yeah, we've got shower room, yeah, it's fine.
See,
or we've got somewhere you can shower, you know.
Perfect.
It just adds to you knowing what you're doing and not getting, you know, you can turn up and go, right, where do we go? Well, and piling up all your cases in one corridor or somewhere out the back there, and they're going, nah, hang on, you can't leave it there because it's a fire exit. And I think that one is actually probably the main one. Know the way out. If it's somewhere you've never been to,
know the way out.
Make sure you know the way out should you need to.
Mm-hmm. Know the fire drills. Know the way out.
Yeah, because, you know, some clubs can be, once the lights go out and it's all going, it can all look so different, you know.
Absolutely. And everybody can get so lost. Absolutely. That's fun.
And it all should lead to a venue, a fantastic gig, a fantastic little tour.
perfect
and the power meter, if you know how to use a meter and meter it, make sure it's right, make sure there's... You know, the last place over here in England you want to see any electrical current is going down the green and yellow wire, because that's the earth. We don't want any current going down there.
So yeah, that's why I need you if I'm over there. I wouldn't know that.
No, you're not green and white. That's it, you know. Don't any power going down that.
You know, green here is a really cool, really positive, you know, fun color. There, no.
It's a cool, positive color here. It should have no current at all going down it. That's what keeps you alive.
Nice, nice. Fantastic tip, my friend.
Hey, did you see that fellow over here who won an interim payment in his case of going deaf in the orchestra?
No.
He was a viola player. It's been all over the news.
Well, I'm sure it has.
A viola player in an orchestra in London, the orchestra in London.
Okay.
And because the trumpets were placed behind blowing down his ear holes, sent him partially deaf, and he's won an interim payment. I think it's £250,000.
Oh my goodness!
And it's because the conductor of the orchestra insisted on setting the orchestra up in the way he did, with the brass behind the strings, the violas and violins. And this chap's opened up a whole can of worms now for the industry because of sound levels.
How many people are going to take him up on this and go, yeah, me too?
Well, the thing is here, I don't know how it is in the States, but here in the UK,
mm-hmm.
any venue, big or small,
mm-hmm.
If you as a member of the public paying to come and watch a concert, if you tap a security man on the shoulder and say, I need some ear protection, please.
I see.
Have to give you ear.
They have to.
Yep, it's the law. It's Noise at Work Act.
Really?
Yeah. So I was chatting to an American guy last week about this, and he was like, "Man, it's." He said, "Look at this." He was with 30 Seconds to Mars, and he said, last week at a gig, the management. And this is in Birmingham Arena. This is like 25,000 people.
Wow.
He said the management asked me to turn it up because they thought it was quiet in an arena. So I said, if you turn it up and one of the 25,000 people says, I've gone deaf, you have to point them then in the direction of the band management. He said, yeah, that's right.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. See, I didn't even realize this. I didn't even realize this.
Yeah. So
wow.
Like, you know, Dancer McCulloch better look out.
Dancer, look, leave Dancer alone. Dancer's got it all figured out where he's at in his neck of the woods.
Yeah.
Honey, I'm so glad we got to catch up. I always am so happy when I get to hear from you.
Well, that's so darn kind of you, young lady.
I know. You like I said, you become such an extension of what I'm doing here. So it's almost like if I don't hear from you or I don't see you in a minute, I get worried.
Ah, yes, I've often been called an extension.
Are you getting into anything good? Are you getting into any gigs or anything? Are you doing anything, or like, what are you doing?
I'm just still doing out here with the local crew and boys in the Genting Arena and the Barclaycard Arena here, doing guys that come in and out of town, and there's a few I know that come back through, and it's great to see them. And there's a few others that go, well, you know what you're doing. Have you been doing this long? So, yeah, a couple of times.
Yeah, yeah, once or twice.
Yeah, once or twice, you know. keep them busy that way. Thanks for getting Hannah on there. Hannah Johnson and the Broken Hearts.
Johnson and the Broken Hearts, yes, I know. I understand that we're on Memphis Metal Mondays, but you also were very kind, and you hooked me up with a very extraordinary, extraordinary lady. And you know, who's somebody who got country, honky tonk, and blues all mixed together. She got it right. She got it right. And
Birmingham, England. We have to get be twinned up with Memphis. I think.
It's funny because we were talking on the phone before we went on air together, and I was talking about how some stuff needed to go over there, and you were telling me how some stuff needed to come over here, and we were like back and forth, and I totally agree, you know. And like I said, Hannah's stuff, I was so thrilled. You know, here's a lady whose biggest fans, are Robert Plant and Ronnie Wood. Okay, yeah. Hello.
Yeah.
You know, this is somebody who got it right. And so we got to catch up. We got to catch up over the weekend because she was my artist of the month, as it turns out. And we got to catch up for a phone interview. And those of you, I know, Batty, you were tuned in. There was several people that were real, real happy. And, to hear her, from the UK calling into Memphis. And if you missed it, you guys are tuned in now. You can go to radio-memphis.com. And actually, we just put her interview up for the Radio Memphis On Demand. And you can catch that. But she,
Shall I tell you what's really funny?
Hmm.
When people come into the Hare and Hounds occasionally and go, hey, guess who I've seen in Highbury Park? And you go, Ronnie Wood? Yeah, Ronnie Wood in the park, just wandering around the park.
You never know.
Here in Birmingham, because he's over at the Hannah's place doing something with her dad.
See, but you never know. That's the thing.
I'm sure it was Ronnie Wood in the park. Yeah, it was, yeah. Stuart will come in and go, oh yeah, Ronnie's here, yeah. Wow.
there it is.
Being cool and wandering about the park, and he likes it, but no one takes any notice of him. That's Birmingham for him.
Well, I'll be looking for some more stuff from you, sweetie. So
we got Bertie. That's the one you want, Bertie.
Okay. All right. So send them on, and we'll see what we can manage and what we can make up out of this. Between you and I, man, we're gonna bust somebody out.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we'll get someone.
They're gonna make it, and we're
gonna make it, man.
They're gonna make it. Me and you, Batty.
Yeah, we'll have to get the road crew together.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely, all in one spot, and make it all happen. I'm down.
Yeah.
I'm totally down.
Oh yeah.
Listen, honey, enjoy your tea. I know it's late/early/ I don't know if you're going to sleep or you're going to stay up. Moment. I know. Thank you so much for spending some time with me.
That's fine. No bother at all.
All right. Tip 30.
Download, folks, and listen to this list back and get out there and ask a few questions before you go to your gigs. It'll make it a lot easier for you.
Good job. All right, sweetie. We'll talk soon, okay, Batty?
Yeah, man.
All right.
You take it easy, and I'll be in touch. And if Kenny's listening, I hope the dog's okay, man.
Yes.
America, world.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, Kevin Batty Walsh right here on Radio Memphis for tip number 30 for the Radio Memphis Road Crew Radio Series. And, every time we get on the phone, we just go all over the place. And I don't even mind sharing that entire conversation with you guys. Batty is so much fun. But he brings up a great point for you guys, for all of you roadies and people that are in the back line and people that are, doing the production and producing. And even for those of you that are the band and you're doing this on your own in the very beginning, advancing your gigs. You make sure that you ask those right questions. You make sure that you're actually calling, a couple weeks ahead of time, before those dates. And the main one, if you tune in and you listen, because we covered a lot of ground, make sure that you look this week at radio-memphis.com, because we always pop up these tips that you miss. Okay, so if you miss it, you're able to listen to them again later. And Batty covered some really, really cool stuff. But more importantly, if you remember anything, remember the way out of a venue. Remember what their fire drill is for that venue, because that right there is some fantastic advice, and that advice can definitely save you and make sure that you have a fantastic show.
Tune in every Monday night at 9:30 p.m. Central to Radio Memphis for your weekly tips in the studio, on the stage, and out on the road. It's all part of the Radio Memphis Road Crew Radio Series, and it's only on Radio Memphis.
The proceeding was produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated and originally aired live on Radio Memphis. Any offers or advertisement contained may not still be valid. All rights are reserved and copyright is held by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. For more, look for all the RMOD players at radio-memphis.com.